Hey everybody, welcome back to the Disney Inside Out podcast. It's the holiday season. That's right, it's December 1st, and I thought it'd be fun to talk about a great holiday tradition at Walt Disney World and Disneyland, the Candlelight Processional. Our guest today is Steve Smith. Steve Smith is an author, storyteller, parent. He grew up in Australia. He was a performer. He worked for several years with Warner Brothers at their Australian film and television studios and theme parks. Then he went overseas and joined the Walt Disney Company, and he's been working for Disney ever since. Right now, Steve's currently in Walt Disney World as the Guest Experience and Entertainment Operations Manager for the Disney Imagination Campus. Steve is going to tell us all about the Candlelight Processional, what it is, what happens during it, how it gets put together, and we'll even get to hear some of Steve's favorite things to do at Disney World during the holidays. So take a listen and get ready for the holidays. Hello, Steve. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Ryan. It's great. I'm glad to be here.
Good. I'm so glad you're doing this. We're excited to hear all about, you know, what you do with the Walt Disney Company. So let's jump right in and tell us what you do at Walt Disney World.
Sure. Well, right now, we have just opened the Candlelight Processional at Epcot. And my main goal is helping with our operation and production, getting that up and running and making sure all the choirs are in place, things like that. And then helping out with operation over the holidays too. But during the regular season, I am part of the Disney Imagination Campus, which is a part of the company that hosts guest talent at Walt Disney World. We do creative workshops, we do performances in the parks and at Disney Springs. And a lot of people have participated in the program over the years, usually with their high school or their college, their orchestra, their band, their choir, something like that. So it's a great way to celebrate the arts and education at Walt Disney World.
That's awesome. I love that. Now, how did you get started with Disney? What sort of your journey? How did you sort of find yourself in this role?
Mine is definitely an unusual one compared to most Disney cast members. I actually, the first Disney park I ever visited was in my late 20s when Hong Kong Disneyland opened. I was over in Hong Kong for the premiere of that park and got to help out with a few things there. And then a couple of years later, I had the opportunity to perform at Tokyo Disneyland over in Japan. And then I actually then moved to New York and worked at the World of Disney in New York City before then joining Disney Cruise Line for a few years. And then finally Walt Disney World down here in Florida. So I've kind of done an unusual kind of backwards trip to get to Walt Disney World. Most people start down here and then go out to the rest of the world, but I kind of did it backwards. So I've had some amazing experiences with the company. I've seen parts of the world I never thought I would get to see. And it's been a great journey. I've been very thankful and lucky to have some really cool experiences.
Yeah, those are definitely some great, you know, very varying experiences. Do you have one that sticks out, a favorite of like working at Cruise Line or theme park? Or
I definitely have projects that were pretty special to me. As far as all the different locations, I love Tokyo Disneyland. I will fall on that sword and say it's the most beautiful theme park in the entire world, specifically DisneySea. I would, if you said to me, like, you have to pack your bag right now so that we can go to DisneySea, I would be on that plane. It is one of my favorite places in the entire world. But as far as projects go, when I first moved down to Florida, I was part of Creative Entertainment then, now Disney Parks Live Entertainment. And one of my first projects was to do Harambe Nights, which was a celebration of the 20th anniversary of The Lion King. And we did this massive street party and beautiful musical experience inside the Festival of the Lion King Theater with a massive orchestra and dancers and celebrity storytellers. And it was just an amazing project to work together with a really small team, with a really tight timeline, and just to work together towards this beautiful storytelling experience was just something I hold near and dear. And I take things that I learned from that experience to all the projects since then, for sure. But it's one that definitely stands out.
And you mentioned, so Creative Entertainment, Live Entertainment. So Live Entertainment, obviously live. Is Creative Entertainment, is that, what does that refer to in terms of the parks? Is that like Mickey's PhilharMagic, would that be considered creative entertainment?
Or... Yeah, so creative entertainment is kind of the group of people that work towards all of the live entertainment experiences and special projects around the parks and resorts. So they used to just be called Creative Entertainment. Now their new name is Disney Parks Live Entertainment. So they specifically cover all of those extra additions to the parks and resorts where you're seeing live pop-ups or character events or themed parties or anything where it's a new live offering in any of the parks and resorts. That's the department that kind of tackles all of those designs and implementations.
So like the new cavalcades, would that
be? Yeah, all that fun stuff. So the different parades teams, the shows on the castle stage, any of the new shows or offerings you see pop up in the resorts. We've just premiered a whole bunch of new things for the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World Resort. So Disney Parks Live Entertainment kind of caters to all of the things you can experience in the parks, other than like our consumer lines or food and beverage, things like that. It's all of the entertainment pieces that you'll experience there. That's what Disney Parks Live Entertainment does.
And speaking of the 50th, is there one show or thing in particular that you are very excited about that's here during the 50th?
There's a lot going on. We've just started celebrating the 50th, and what a great time for us to be able to premiere it after, you know, a lot of things around the globe not being fully operational. It's exciting to see the guests experience these kind of amazing new offerings across Walt Disney World property. So obviously, it's the 50th anniversary of the opening of the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World and Walt Disney World as it is today, beginning back in 1971. But the experiences you can take in across all the parks are so varied that it honestly depends, you know, how you want to experience Walt Disney World as to how you celebrate it. For me, the one show that stands out, well, I'll give you two. The two shows that to me stand out as truly exceptional and just I love. We have a new nighttime spectacular at Epcot called Harmonious, which celebrates the music of Disney and Pixar and all of those classics that everyone holds near and dear, but also all the new IP that we own and celebrate. And it's such a beautiful show to hear all these songs that you know from your childhood sung and presented in the traditional art forms that represent the culture of that storytelling. For some people, it's the first time they've heard those songs sung in their native language or using traditional folk singers or instruments from that culture. And just to hear all of this beautiful music from around the world celebrated in one show is just, it just swells your heart. There's no way to not enjoy that show. It's beautiful. Oh, and then I was going to say the other element that I think is really spectacular and amazing is the four beacons in each of the parks. So the Tree of Life, the Tower of Terror, the Spaceship Earth Ball at Epcot, and the castle at the Magic Kingdom are celebrated in this beautiful photo mapping and light spectacular each evening. And each of those icons is celebrated with a different kind of color palette. But just the way to see these lights kind of bring to life these icons in the parks is just breathtaking. The technology we use and the music we use around it is just... It's taking something that's already beautiful and just making it, you know, extra. It's just beyond. They're beautiful sights to see.
Yeah, I love the beacons. I was saying on another episode that I love the Tower of Terror, one, because it has the people dancing at the top.
Yeah, in the windows up on the top of the hotel. It's really cool.
I thought that was so cool.
And from a distance, you don't even notice it. But if you're looking for it, it's a really cool little piece to nod back to those guests in the hotel. Yeah,
I didn't notice it until somebody pointed out and I was like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, the castle and the tree just looks so great. And the Spaceship Earth, I just think, I mentioned this before too, but I was like, gosh, it should have always lit up like that. It's like, I can never imagine.
I hope they keep it. It's such, you can see it from miles. I was just, the other night I was up in Coronado Resort. They have the tower there. There's an amazing bar that you can go to up on the top 16th floor, and just to look out over Epcot and see that Spaceship Earth just light up in a new way is just, it's breathtaking. It's such a beautiful thing to see. It will be a shame if they disappear, because it's one of those things that I think is such an improvement and that people love. So I hope some of those elements from the 50th will stay around for years to come. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I think Beacons of Magic definitely could be a thing, because it's not necessarily tied to you know, an anniversary or anything like that. So
sure.
I do love that. So, and for your role in Disney, when you're working on live entertainment, how does something go from like idea to reality in the park?
I mean, it definitely depends on the project and which teams are involved in bringing it to life. You know, everything starts with a creative idea, and whether that idea is a new idea or it's an idea that's been brought up before and they decide that now is the time to launch it or create it. The powers that be kind of decide, yep, this is something we're going to include in this seasonal event, or this is something we want to do from scratch. The creative team get together and they work out under the guidance of their producer and production managers, usually, how they're going to go about creating that new element. So the team involved can change and it's dependent on what the project is itself. But there are usual steps that we follow as far as including our park partners or the resort partners, costuming, lighting design, sound. It depends on the project that you're thinking of, but the teams mm-hmm. all come together and focus on getting that project into the parks or resorts. And some timelines are pretty relaxed and you have, you know, 2 or 3 years in development for some things. And there are other times where the green light kind of happens and the show is supposed to open in 3 or 4 weeks and you kind of have to get it off the ground really fast. So it honestly just depends on what the project is and how many people are involved. But the process is always a mixture of incredibly challenging and super rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, I feel like there have been things where they announce a new show and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, it's already opening. Like it happens so fast.
Yeah, one that I can remember really well is the Frozen Summer Fun, which we celebrated at Disney's Hollywood Studios. I was in for rehearsals for that parade, and I think between like the final green light and when we were supposed to be opening was something like 2.5 weeks. And we had to get a whole parade up and running in that time. It was pretty intense, but a lot of fun, but very intense to make sure that it was, you know, up and running, ready for our guests 2.5 weeks later.
Yeah, Frozen's a great example. I felt like everything Frozen came like, they're like, we need it and we need it now. The ride, the show, the parade, it all happens. Like, I was like, wow, you think like you hear about it. And I'm like, okay, probably in like a couple years that'll be out. And it was like, nope, coming this fall. Like, you know,
I think Frozen was one of those things that, I don't know, I guess the feeling from the guest's point of view, I certainly don't want to speak on behalf of the company, but from the guest's point of view, I feel like its success caught people off guard, maybe.
Yeah.
And that for a few years, some of the movies that had come out, we didn't necessarily celebrate and make a big splashy deal over their premiere like we had in years past. I mean, you picture back to movies like Hercules or Mulan and how, like, you know, that movie would premiere and there'd be a whole parade and there'd be like the whole park would be, you know, painted a different color. And for Frozen, I feel like they knew it was going to be successful, but they didn't realize how internationally successful that movie was going to be. And to capitalize on that and also to allow our guests to celebrate that story, I think they just jumped on getting as many things out there that could help celebrate those characters and that story. And I think Frozen Summer Fun is a great example, but by no means is it out there on its own as far as a project that went from green light to happening in a very short amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved that excitement around Frozen because it did, as you mentioned, like they used to during, you know, the Disney Renaissance period, the movie would come out, there would be a parade in MGM at the time. I loved when it was called MGM. and it, you know, I think of Aladdin and, like you said, Hercules and Mulan, like they would have their own parade and it was like a whole big thing. The movies were such an integral part of people visiting. And then it kind of steered away from that. But Frozen really brought it back. And I did, you know, whether you love Frozen or not, I loved that it brought back the excitement to the parks of like, oh, we have to go because, you know, there's Frozen things to see. And, you know, it kind of brought that.
I think part of that too is that Frozen was just a very different type of story that we hadn't seen in quite a long time. So I think for some guests who had felt they were left out of some of those stories, I think it was a new experience for them, and they were able to then sort of celebrate those storylines and characters that they hadn't seen in a while. So I'm certainly not surprised that Frozen ended up being the hit that it was. Just based on that, I think it was, we were due for some of those kind of storytelling characters that were different to what we'd seen in the past. So I'm glad that they jumped on board and had so many new offerings and kind of explored different ways of telling that story in the parks and resorts for our guests to experience. Yeah.
So do you have a favorite park?
Here at Walt Disney World? Or
sure, Walt Disney World. Let's narrow it down to Walt Disney World.
So I'm originally from Australia, and so that's why I hadn't been to a Disney park until my late 20s, early 30s. But I would say, for me, I love going to Epcot, just because I think the guests around you are different. It's a different group of people that go to Epcot, I think. You know, it's a park that was originally opened as a place to explore technology and innovation and cultures from around the world. And I think over the years, you know, that message has kind of changed and morphed a little bit. And there are certainly people that go to Epcot for the very specific reason of enjoying visiting each of the countries as they go around and all the different food and drink items you can get from those countries. But for me, it just has kind of a more relaxed vibe about it. I like just kind of, I would honestly just go to Epcot just for a walk around the lake, just for like ambiance and exercise, which I know is not, you know, available to most people. Most people don't have Walt Disney World as their backyard. But I have a 5-year-old son and he loves going to the parks just to kind of explore and walk around versus like, you know, going on rides and seeing characters and things like that. So for me, I think Epcot's my favorite down here at the moment anyways.
At the moment, yes. Probably changes, right?
And there's lots of things that are changing at Epcot too. So, you know, in the next few years, there's going to be so many different things that are be a part of that park and it will probably get, you know, a lot busier and things like that. So maybe it won't be my favorite park in 2 years from now, just because it'll become everyone else's favorite park. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I know Epcot as a child, it was not my favorite, but as an adult, it grew. It, I feel like you have to be an adult to really appreciate what it has to offer.
Yeah, I think so and, too.
Yeah, and I would say that and Hollywood Studios was always my favorite. I still sometimes call it MGM just because. Mm-hmm.
Just for nostalgia's sake?
I think nostalgia's sake. I always loved it, like, just because in MGM, like, it was about, you know, they really filmed things there in the old Hollywood and it was just such a great, cool place to go. And that, to me, it still is. And I know it's becoming a little more of like, you know, a sort of catch all for lots of different properties, but I still think it's exciting that way.
Yeah, I think I agree with you that most people see it as a kind of a catch all park now that there's lots of different things going on in the story. About, you know, its identity is kind of a little fluid right now. I don't know that everyone really has landed on what the identity of Hollywood Studios is. But I think the good thing about the name change and the expansion means that Disney's Hollywood Studios can include all of those different, you know, IP licensing agreements that we probably couldn't in the past. And so there's a lot of stories we can tell now in the parks and resorts just because Hollywood Studios has changed in that direction. So I think you know, before now, when it had its old name, you probably couldn't have had some of the new things we have in the park right now. So, you know, on both sides of the coin, you know, I like that we now have a park where you can flex in and out different things as they become popular or that we get to celebrate them again. I like that, you know, it's one park where you can celebrate both the storytelling of Frozen and the excitement of Indiana Jones and, you know, far off galaxies like Star Wars. So it's a kind of a park for everybody, which I kind of appreciate.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's great. And I always go back when we talk about changes happening in Disney World, I'm like, you know what? I think it's what Walt Disney always said it was going to be, that it would never be the same. It would always grow.
Yeah.
It would always change. And we don't have to like all the changes, but I think change is important. So everybody feels included. And like you said, you can do things that if they had just stayed MGM forever, we probably wouldn't have, you know, maybe Star Wars in there or Toy Story, you know, like we wouldn't have everything that we have now. So it's important to grow.
Yeah, for sure.
You're frequently at Disney World. Like you said, it's your backyard. Yeah. if someone's visiting, do you have like a favorite tip you like to give to people if they're visiting on a trip?
You know, I do. I have a few. First off, I think the world is changing in the way that we plan our vacations and experience our vacations. And Walt Disney World now, there are so many digital tools to help you plan ahead and to make sure you don't miss out on the essential things you want to experience, which I think is great in the sense that you have the knowledge of knowing, you know, we're a month away from our trip to Walt Disney World. And the one thing my kid wants to do is experience this attraction or meet this character or see this one thing. And you can, that far out now, almost plan to the point of knowing for sure that you can do those things. And I think in the past, when people would dread the idea of going to Walt Disney World and having to be at the rope drop at the beginning of the day, just to run to an attraction to make sure they got that experience ticked off their list. I think that now you can ease into that a little bit more and plan some things in advance, but also kind of just enjoy your day as it happens now. I think there's enough to offer, and with our digital technology, you can kind of either plan nothing and just experience it as it goes, or you can, plan everything in your day down to the minute, and let some of our amazing digital technology provide tips and experiences for you based on what your interests are. So I like that there's both of those things available, that you can overplan and enjoy it that way if you're someone like me that likes to control everything, or if you're someone that just kind of likes to roll with whatever's happening on the day, you can do it both ways. So I like that. I also would always suggest, if it's your first time visiting Walt Disney World, that you really look at staying somewhere on property. And I say that just because it keeps you inside of the bubble, the experience the whole time you're here, that you never really have to be transported outside the world of Walt Disney World. For all your experiences to exist inside of that space means that you're never really in this disjointed place of going from Walt Disney World and then driving out to like International Drive and seeing all these, restaurants and chain hotels and things like that. It just kind of takes you out of the moment. So if you really want to capitalize on your visit here and your experience here, there are so many different hotels to choose from and different price points and different experiences. My parents came over to visit in 2016. And coming from Australia, my parents wanted to stay somewhere that was, kind of cool and unusual and different. And I got them a room at Disney's Animal Kingdom Lodge. And it's just such an immersive experience. And, you're waking up and there's zebra and giraffe outside your window while you're having coffee. That's something my parents would never experience in Australia. Right. And so just that, it's the magic comes home with you when you stay at a Disney hotel. And I love that about, what we can offer here at Walt Disney World versus any of our other international locations.
I 100% agree with you. I always tell people to stay there because, like you said, that's a good phrase. The magic comes home with you. And I just tell people you're completely taken care of. You're like wrapped in the arms of Disney.
Yeah.
So if anything should go wrong or anything you have a question about, there is someone there who can help you fix it for you versus if you sit in a hotel outside of property wondering like, well, I don't know what to do. And it just, there's something about the service and Disney, you really just feel taken care of all around from the minute you wake up to the minute you go back to bed.
So yeah, for sure.
I love that tip too. So, all right, we're talking about lots of experiences and planning. So we're in December, it's the holidays. And one of the great things you can do at Disney World and Epcot is go to the Candlelight Processional, which I know you work on and work with.
That's right.
So if you can tell us, for those who have never been, don't know what we're talking about, what is the Candlelight Processional?
So the Candlelight Processional has a bit of a legacy with the Walt Disney Company. It stemmed from a celebration all the way back in 1955, the year that Disneyland opened. And it's gone through many changes in that span of time, from California over to Walt Disney World. And we both, the East and West Coasts, both still continue to have a version of the show. But here at Walt Disney World, it's basically a celebration of the holidays. It's a telling of the traditional Christmas story. And it's celebrated with a huge vocal ensemble, a massed choir of, around 300 guest talent voices. We have a massive tree in the middle of the stage that's filled with volunteer cast members that take part in a selection process and are part of a cast choir. And we also showcase the Voices of Liberty, which most people experience while they're at Epcot as well. Some amazing equity singers and performers that are contracted by Epcot and Walt Disney World. It has an orchestra of around 50 people. It has a guest conductor every night. And here at Walt Disney World, we celebrate with a guest celebrity narrator as well. And our season lasts from the day after Thanksgiving all the way through until about December 30th, usually each year. which is a long season, to do three shows a night versus Disneyland usually only celebrates with two nights of shows. Hmm. It's just a different celebration over there for them than it is for us here at Walt Disney World. And ours being at Epcot just means that there's a lot of people that are coming through the park on vacation or locals that it's just become part of their holiday traditions and celebration. And it's a great way to come together and sit outside in the very few weeks of the year that it's kind of nice and crisp and cold here in Florida, and just listen to a beautiful orchestra and beautiful vocal arrangements, you know, to help celebrate the holiday season. But to speak to its legacy and its heritage with the company, back in 1955, it started just with 12 Dickensian carolers at Disneyland. They were performers that were there for that year specifically. But as soon as 1956 came around, the next holiday season, it grew to 300 members of an all guest talent choir at the train station at Disneyland. So it, the first year was just a small little group that were singing around different locations in the park. And then by the next year, they realized how popular it was and how much people loved celebrating the holidays at Disneyland. So it became, you know, a roughly 300 piece vocal choir mixed up of different different choirs, but all guest talent. So those are not people that are cast members or contracted by the parks. They're people who are coming in to perform as a guest talent. So like your high school choir or your local scout troop or things like that, that come together to perform and entertain the guests at the park. So in 56, it started there. They performed with the Disneyland Band as well, which most people are aware of. Disneyland has this very famous you know, band that performs at lots of different events and locations through the parks. And then in 1957, it started a new tradition called Christmas Around the World Parade. And so it started by singing at one part of the park, and they would do a processional through the park to get to their final stage location where they would perform the rest of the show. So that kind of processional piece of it was new in 57 and has continued every year since then. They've changed the flow of the show a little bit. In the 60s is when it turned into a two-night show in Town Square. And it basically took the form that we know today, where it's just, you know, it's a narrator that tells the story. And then in between pieces of the story, there's lots of different traditional Christmas songs and hymns. And then with 1971, with Walt Disney World opening over here, they brought over the Candlelight Processional as part of that legacy piece from Disneyland. So they featured guest talent and performed at the castle in 71. We have a massive, you know, Christmas tree made up of people that is the focal point of the show. And that was there all the way back in 71. And then throughout the years at Magic Kingdom, it was either at the castle or at the train station, just depending on the year. There was a few different versions of where the show was staged. But eventually in 94, it came over to Epcot, to the American Gardens Theater in the American Pavilion. So this beautiful backdrop of the lake behind it, looking out over the rest of Epcot. The show is just this massive spectacular that just happens every holiday season, and people really look forward to it. And I mentioned there's a celebrity narrator that comes through and tells the story. Those celebrity narrators have changed throughout the years. We've had lots of famous names and faces come through, some that are a piece of the Disney family, people like Jodie Benson, that is the voice of The Little Mermaid, or, you know, other celebrities that people know and love from the world of sports, from Broadway, from TV, from radio, just lots of different advocates. It just depends year to year as to who we have that's here to celebrate the season with us. And it's a great tradition, and we all love it. All of us here at Walt Disney World look forward to the Candlelight season. One, because all of our friends and fellow cast members are a part of the show. It's one of the only shows on property that cast members can be a part of every year and audition to be a part of. But it's also just part of everyone's kind of holiday celebration. When Candlelight starts, you can hear it throughout the park. You can hear it from, you know, miles from the park, sometimes depending on how clear the night is. But it's just a beautiful thing that everyone celebrates every year.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those Disney traditions that people go there for that, and you see it on social media or anywhere. It's mm-hmm. And you mentioned the celebrity narrators. I was looking up some of them. There's been John Stamos, Haley Joel Osment, Susan Lucci, Whoopi Goldberg, Neil Patrick Harris. Can you tell us about the lineup for this year?
Yeah, so this year we've got an amazing mix of celebrity narrators. So people like Cheetah Rivera is here at the moment. Jodie Benson, obviously, that I mentioned before. Alton Fitzgerald White, Lisa Ling, Andy Garcia, Anna Gasteyer, Blair Underwood. It's a great mix. I love that. One of the great things about the Candlelight Processional too that I personally am really passionate about is that it's always this beautiful, diverse mix of celebrities. So it's not just people that we know from the movies, or it's not just people that we know from Broadway. It's a great mix of celebrity narrators that come down, and they add their own personal style, their own, each show feels different depending on who it is that's the narrator. And so if you have a favorite, you can go and see the show that night. Or if, you know, if your family is a sports family, they can go on the night that it's, you know, one of the sports related celebrities. It kind of depends on how your family celebrates the holidays. That depends on who would be your pick to be the celebrity narrator. And through the years, there's just been so many different names, you know, hundreds that have come through to tell this story. Disneyland tends to have a celebrity that's kind of a household name, someone that's a big name. Last season they had Lin-Manuel Miranda come through and tell the story, which of course everyone was really excited about. Their celebrity narrators, because they only have two nights of shows, it's a smaller kind of selection for them. So for us, it's a great opportunity to kind of be a little bit more diverse and showcase different celebrities that would appeal to different people.
And are there multiple shows in one day, or is it just one show?
Yeah, so we do three shows a day, 7 days a week at the moment. That can change in the future, but at the moment for this season, we do three shows a day, every day, and they finish, the last show finishes in time so that you could see the last show and then also witness Harmonious on the lake and watch the fireworks show there after. So it's nice in that, like, it's offered three times a night, so that if you have young ones, I have a son that's five. I know that if I was to take him, we would probably go and see the first show so that we could get home in time for bed. But there are other people that like, you know, spending their day in the park and then having a nice sit down dinner and going to enjoy the last show of the night. So it's good too that there's those options for friends and family to celebrate, you know, in a timeline that kind of fits for what their family's doing in the park that day.
Now, what is sort of the timeline? I mean, the show's been going on for so long, as you mentioned, it must, mm-hmm. you know, run like clockwork. When do the preparations start? Like, when do you begin start sort of putting together the show for the new season?
So funnily enough, the show itself, because there's just so many moving pieces, and because we have guest talents, so groups that are there that are not cast members that we have come through Disney Imagination Campus and other community groups as well. The planning for the show literally begins as soon as one season has completed. There are things that we do to get the next season in place starting in January, even though the show doesn't, you know, premiere until the night after Thanksgiving. So if you can imagine, like, trying to organize, you know, up to 300 voices each show, and there's three shows a night, and the show season runs for several weeks, that's a lot of things to get in place before you have everything ready to go. So we start planning as soon as one season is over. Each department kind of has its own timeline depending on what their area of expertise is. There's never a dull moment at Walt Disney World. When one thing finishes, the next thing starts. So you kind of start working towards that as soon as one thing's over. But I would say we ramp up the operation kind of mid-year-ish. July, August, September is when things kind of really start happening, so that we're prepared for the next season to open in November.
And can you talk about your role within the process? Like, what you sort of, what do you work on with the show?
Yeah, so I've been really lucky to have several different roles with the Candlelight Processional. There's someone that's, you know, a point person that looks after the orchestra that we have on stage. And then there's another person that solely is in charge of helping out with the cast choir, and their selection process and their rehearsal process, and then their nightly operation. There is a whole team of people as part of Disney Imagination Campus that helps select and schedule all of our guest talent that comes through to perform. So all of those youth choirs and community choirs that have participated in the past go through Disney Imagination Campus. And then you've got a whole production team, you know, people that are working on the costuming elements, the sound and lighting, you know, all of our amazing technicians that work at Epcot, especially at the AmGuard stage, which has a variety of shows throughout the year, they're planning for all of those different elements months in advance. And you've got a whole production team that are working on all those small details throughout the entire season. You have a team that just contracts the celebrity talent and makes sure that their visits are all coordinated and their travel is set up and, you know, all of those contracts are in place. So it's a huge, huge, you know, task to bring all of these teams together, working on different timelines to open the show right after Thanksgiving, which is in itself enough of a challenge because you have to finish one type of show at AmGuard, which is the American Gardens Theater. And then, you know, you have one day off, which is Thanksgiving, which, you know, for most people, that's not really a quiet day at home to just relax. Right. And then the very next day, you open one of the largest shows on Walt Disney property. So it's a challenge every year, but somehow we make it happen. You know, we're a big team, but we all come together to make it happen for our guests. And I'm proud of all the teams that come together on it.
How does something like it with, you mentioned the outside groups and everybody, how do they rehearse? Like, do they sort of get music and things on their own and they're responsible for sort of learning it and then coming to Disney kind of already sort of prepped and ready?
Yeah, so Disney Imagination Campus is a part of the company that operates year-round. It allows mostly youth groups to travel to Walt Disney World and experience, you know, a creative workshop or an academic workshop. They can perform on property. And so we're used to operating, you know, throughout the year. Candlelight is kind of a piece that we have worked on in different ways throughout the years, but they can apply to perform at Walt Disney World through that program. And we have a process of evaluating their abilities and their audition pieces. And then we provide the music for them so that they can start rehearsing with their own group. So that when it does come time for them to visit Walt Disney World and take part in the program, we bring them together. We introduce them to a lot of other choirs that are there for that night's performance as well. So it's a great opportunity for like-minded, you know, performers to get together and meet other groups from sometimes around the world, to participate in each show. They do a little bit of a warm-up before each show. They sometimes get to meet the celebrity narrator of the night who comes in and kind of gives them a little pep talk before their first show. And then they head on out to the stage. It's a huge kind of puzzle piece back there to move that many people and get them up onto the risers in a very specific way so that the show looks the same and looks beautiful, but also sounds amazing. Making sure that all your different vocal parts are in the same kind of format on the stage is a tricky piece on its own. But yeah, all those pieces moving together backstage and with performers from all over domestically and internationally that apply to the program through Disney Imagination Campus. Each year it's a new challenge. And we, as I said, we start processing those applications, you know, as early as people start applying. So sometimes January, February, you'll start seeing applications come in for people to be a part of the next season of the Candlelight Processional, which is great to see every year that there are so many groups that like to return and so many new groups every year as well. So for some schools, for some organizations, it's a bit of an annual kind of event for them to be a part of. It's part of their tradition. And so it's great to see familiar faces come through, but it's also great to see brand new groups and organizations be a part of the holiday festivities as well.
Now, can they, if let's say someone's listening, they're like, I want my group to participate. Do they go to Disney Imagination Campus? Is there a website?
Yeah, they should absolutely look up Disney Imagination Campus. As part of that program, Candlelight's just one of the many programs that Disney Imagination Campus has, but they'll find all different information on the website that they can go to. And Candlelight's just one of the many. So they'll be excited to see that we have a lot of different opportunities to perform on Walt Disney World's property, and as well as many academic programs too. But Candlelight, yeah, is a great opportunity for those people who think, you know what, my high school choir would love to perform on that stage as part of the Candlelight Processional. So yeah, they can go to the website for Disney Imagination Campus and look up exactly how to apply.
I will link that in the show notes. And if you are interested in applying, you could be performing at Walt Disney World. So check it out. A frequent Disney goer, do you have any favorite Disney holiday traditions you do with your husband, son, as family? Do you do anything every year?
Oh boy. Honestly, my son's now 5, and what he likes to celebrate in the holidays has changed over the last 5 years for sure. One of our traditions, which I'm really even just talking about it kind of gets me pretty emotional when it comes to just discussing it. There at Epcot, we celebrate holidays around the world with some different traditions and storytellers as part of their holiday celebrations. And in Italy, there is a storyteller called La Befana. She's a 2,000-something-year-old witch. She's a kind, gentle-hearted witch. But she tells the story of the very first Christmas and her, you know, traveling all over to deliver a gift to the babe. You know, she talks about it. And her story is just this beautiful, well-told, traditional story from Italy. And, you know, my in-laws have Italian roots, and for my son Hudson to hear that story every year, there's a particular performer who I used to be one of the stage managers for that show, and I just have a connection with, and to hear her tell that story with such, you know, beautiful passion every year, and for Hudson to have met her, you know, the past four holiday seasons, you know, we have photos with her from every year that he's been able to go and see the show, and it's just something that we do every year, and you know, I love seeing the storytellers come out from all the different cultures around the world. It reminds me of, you know, the traditions that I have at home in Australia. And I just think it's a great opportunity for especially Americans to see the different cultures on display through the holidays. I know most people, when they think about Christmas or the holiday season, they think about very specific things that relate to their family's experience. And I think Epcot is a great place to showcase the many varied ways that people around the world celebrate the holidays. And I think that's, you know, that's special too, to acknowledge the traditions we all have, but also to celebrate the traditions that other people have as part of their family's holidays traditions, and maybe taking part in them or celebrating them and enjoying the storytelling or the food or the drinks or whatever it is about, you know, those traditions. I love that families are able to do that and kind of expand, you know, their understanding of what it means to celebrate the holidays. So that's kind of my favorite thing to do for the holidays down here. You know, other than visiting the new things that kind of happen every year at Walt Disney World, there's a new offering just from the past couple of years at Disney's Animal Kingdom called the Merry Menagerie, which is a series of beautifully handcrafted puppets of different sizes that come out around the Tree of Life and on Discovery Island, and you get to interact with these amazing like artisan puppetry. I don't know how to describe it. It's, you know, they're giant puppets right there in front of you, and they're very stylistic. Right. But the way they interact with the audience and with young children, I have a beautiful picture of my son when he was about 3, just hugging this penguin. This penguin that's a baby penguin puppet. But we stood and just watched this puppet penguin for maybe 30 minutes. It was just captivating and a beautiful thing to witness, you know, as the sun is setting and the lights around the Tree of Life are coming up. It's a pretty magical kind of experience to sit there and enjoy. But there's lots of new things every year here for the holidays, but that was one of the things in the last couple of years that I just thought was just a beautiful project that they brought to life.
Yeah, the holidays at Disney are so great, because like you said, there's so many new things, and Epcot is a place where it's easy to walk through Epcot and just like kind of breeze through all the countries. But at the holidays, like I tell people, I was like, just step into one and just really listen, and you can learn so much about the way holidays are celebrated around the world. And it is really great to sort of get to experience, you know, where else in the world can you go in one day and experience all these different, you know, cultures,
right,
in one afternoon. So do you have a favorite? So one thing with Disney, before I ask this, they have so much food that's impossible to eat everything. And everything on Instagram, and I'm like, I have to have that, I have to have that. And it's just overwhelming. Do you have a holiday offering at Disney World that you, either one that comes every year that you always get, or one this year that you're like, you must have this?
There's a few. I'm not particularly much of a foodie, to be honest. When I look at all of the new offerings we have across property, I think it's amazing that we have so many well-themed and beautiful food and beverage options for people who are really excited about those things. I'm not necessarily really passionate about, you know, exploring the parks through what I eat and drink in the day. But some of the things that I definitely do in the holidays, Epcot is pretty famous for its cookie stroll, where you can walk around from country to country and have a different cookie, which sounds kind of, you know, childish a little bit. You're getting all these different types of cookies in one day. But the black and white cookie you can get is just beyond. It's pretty amazing. That's one of my favorite things about the holidays at Epcot, is doing the cookie stroll. And then, I don't know, there's something about like enjoying, you know, if this is your flavor, there's like a spiced wine you can get. And just to enjoy like watching fireworks where it's nice and cold and you're sipping on like a hot spiced mulled wine is just, you know, for the Australian / Floridian in me, I get to celebrate those like 3 or 4 days that are a little bit colder down here for us. And it's just a nice kind of thing that makes you feel like you're celebrating a traditional, you know, American idea of what Christmas is. So for me, that's probably the two things that I like to make sure I do every year.
That's great. I love it. I love those answers. So another thing, holidays, you know, people are thinking about gift giving. So one thing I want to highlight about you is that you're an author. What a great gift to give somebody a book. So tell us about your books and sort of the idea, the journey. Just give us a little glimpse where we can find the books.
Sure. Yeah. So in the last kind of 2 years, obviously everyone has experienced different versions of what the last 2 years were like for them. For me in particular, I was spending a lot of time at home while Walt Disney World was, you know, either closed or was coming back to life. I was at home with my son for most of that. And one of the projects that I ended up kind of just conceiving and realizing that I could do with that time is to publish some children's books. And I wanted to put out some stories that were inclusive and that showcased characters and locations that most children's books don't necessarily showcase. So I wrote a series of children's books called If I Were A, and it was If I Were a Tree or If I Were a Fish or If I Were a Bird. And it basically was just comparing the different types of things out there in the world and what would be so great about being different. Only for, you know, the children that the storybooks are about to realize that, you know, sometimes you can wish and dream that things were different, but really you should celebrate the things about yourself that make you unique. So I did that series. And then to honor my son turning 5 and the journey that we took to become parents and become a family, I wrote a book called My Dads Are the Best. About a little guy and his 2 dads and the things that he likes to do and experience with his 2 dads. And I used, you know, us as a family model. I worked with an illustrator who kind of based the characters in the book off of the 3 of us, and just to have as a keepsake for him, but also, you know, to share as a gift for my friends and family too, was kind of something special to me. All the books are self-published, so they're out there, on the World Wide Web, for purchase. You can get them through Amazon, you can get them through your local bookstore or small business, and order them that way. They're also available internationally, so my friends and family back home in Australia were able to order them. Awesome. But yeah, I started a little company called Books by Wordsmith, a little play on my last name. And you can go to booksbywordsmith.com and see all the different titles that are there.
Excellent. I will link that as well too. And if anyone wants to, you know, check out more from you, can we find you on social media? If you want to share, where can people find you?
Yeah, honestly, if you want to reach out, the best way to do is on LinkedIn, actually. Just from there, I can talk all things, you know, industry related. If you're inquiring about, you know, projects at Walt Disney World or anything like that, I'm happy to have a chat or talk about those kind of projects and how I've been involved.
Well, thank you, Steve, for telling us all about holidays at Disney, your favorite things, and talking about the Candlelight Processional. It's such a great tradition. I know so many people go to it, and I hope to go to it one. I feel like I don't know why I haven't been, but I will go.
Why haven't you, Ryan? Why haven't you?
Huh? I don't know. Don't at me, as the kids say. but I will be checking that out because I just love the holidays at Disney. So I appreciate you being here because I know you're busy, but thank you for coming and educating us all on the holidays.
Thanks, Ryan. It was a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to all your other episodes. And if anyone wants to come on down and celebrate the holidays, now is a great time to do it.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you got in the holiday spirit after hearing Steve talk about the Candlelight Processional. Make sure to check out Steve at booksbywordsmith.com. Follow Books by Wordsmith on Instagram. You can check out some of his great kids' books. They'll make some great gifts this holiday season. And don't forget, please rate and review Disney Inside Out podcasts on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a couple notes if you enjoy the show, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Disney Inside Out Podcasts, and we'll see you real soon.